my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 485, to be broadcast on Wednesday, June 3rd, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely rock Dr. Fran Storch. She's out riding her bike. Good for her. Anyway, if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment down here below. I may or may not be able to get back to you. You can also send me a comment. If you're listening to this in an audio file, you can send a comment to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the program, you and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment down below, or you can drop me an email. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, Ron's Rant of the Week. Oh yeah, I keep saying it, paying attention yet, watching the price of gas, why aren't you riding your bike, la 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 la. So anyway, the current price of gas went down a couple of cents this week. Down? Really? That's unusual. Don't plan on keeping that. didn't go down a whole lot. It's still $4.53 a gallon here in beautiful downtown Mansfield. It's still $5.84 for diesel, which means the diesel actually went up a little bit from last week. Yeah, so you know what? Just, it's time to dust the bike off. Come on out and play with us. Come on out and use your bike for fun and for adventure and for, you know, commuting and running errands. There's all sorts of things you can do on your bicycle. How much more do I have to rant about this? Oh, so enough of that. Let's move on to another rant that I got. I got this one from lovely, lovely Facebook. You know how Facebook can do weird things? Well, it does do weird things. We're also on Facebook on Bicycle Talk, a Bicycle Talk page. But I always get all sorts of haters because, you know, I'm Bicycle Talk. So people hate people on bicycles. We don't know why, but that's okay. So here you go. Would cyclists behave differently if they had identification numbers and paid road tax? So a gentleman by the name of Pragmatist Dave answers it with, stupid question, of course, yes. And they would study for and pass a driving test, and they should have insurance for the injuries to pedestrians they caused whilst present. They just cycle on and are undefinable. Okay, so this is that I had to comment. I mean, you know, you start a war sometimes when you do this sort of thing, but I had to comment. So my question back to you is, would drivers of motorized vehicles behave differently if they had identification numbers and paid road tax? How is that working? I would say not so good. So, you know, as much as you want cyclists to be more responsible for themselves when they're riding out on the road, I'm going to ask the motorists that are driving cars to be the same way. So, you know, it works both ways. I think that's the bottom line here. I'm going to move on. That's enough ranting for this week. I'm sure there's more to rant about. You guys will let me know. Okay, on a positive side, last week I was working on, week one of the Mansfield Elementary School fourth grade bicycle program. And it was really cool. I had the afternoon shift on most days. I had one day I didn't quite make it because I had too much stuff going on. But I've been helping out with the fourth grade program over at the elementary school, and we're teaching kids how to ride bikes. and how to fix bikes. And I think actually this week is going to be repairs, flat tires, you know, general, how do I fix this mess that I'm looking at? So we're going to work on that too. And then there's going to be an open road program too, in which case we're going to take them out onto the roads, folks. That should be exciting and interesting and a little scary, but that's okay. You know, we'll get there. Why do I say a little scary and have that little hesitation there? Because guess what? Out of all these fourth graders, there were 30 of them that have never ridden a bike before. That scares me. That's really kind of the bicycle is like a rite of passage. It's the thing you do to gain your freedom when you're a kid. This is how we were all brought up. Yeah, we like me, the old guy, right, that's talking to you right now. But it's like this is how we got around. And parents are simply not allowing their kids to ride bicycles or even introducing the idea that they could ride a bicycle. That is frightening to me. Absolutely frightening. It's a great source of fitness. It's a great source of self-esteem and confidence. And it's like, parents, are you listening? Is anyone out there listening that doesn't allow their kid to ride a bike? Please. Probably not on this show, but you might know someone, maybe a friend or a neighbor or, you know, family member or whatever that might have this direct policy. And to me, that's just really upsetting. So anyway, but on a positive side, this is going really well and the kids are really into it and they're really having a lot of fun. They're having fun riding the bikes. They now know how to adjust their seat heights correctly. And we have a whole fleet of bikes that they're using for doing this sort of thing. So it's really been, it's been a blast. We even teach them about what happens when someone opens a car door in front of you. Yeah, we've been doored. We've all been doored one time or another, or at least been real close to that sort of thing. So anyway, we're teaching them everything we know about bicycles. We have a curriculum that we're working with. We're working with the gym teachers who are wonderful. They're really, really good. And yeah, it's a great program. So I'm really excited about it. And remember, also on a positive side, it's an important time of the year as more people are in need of bicycles. And please support the WAIM Bicycle Program. That's W-A-I-M. You can find them online. You can find their open hours online. If you have a reasonably good bicycle that is still functional, might need just a few things to make it functional, then you can drop it off at their, they have a little loading dock behind the building and you can drop it off there, but you do need to check their hours because they're only open certain hours of the day. And yes, they need bicycles. And so do the folks that rely on WAIM to get them the goods and services that they need. WAIM is, in case you're wondering, is Wyndham Area Interfaith Ministries. So please support WAIM. Okay, on a positive side, the Giro has finished. Is that positive or not? Oh, that's kind of scary. It's all over. So Sunday was the final day of the Giro. They did the big parade into Rome. They finished in Rome, and they do this crazy criterium finish after being out of the road for a while, just kind of like they do in the Tour de France, where they do the parade in Paris around the Champs-Élysées and all that. So anyway, that happened yesterday, and we have results from that, which I will talk about in the show. And I'm going to just throw a big shout out to Durango, Colorado, Sepkus. Big week, some surprises, some changes, but generally speaking, it was as expected. I'll leave it at that. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tip. Yeah, that e-bike conversion. I'm not doing so well with that. I got another idea from internet and also from someone who wrote in and said, hey, have you tried this yet? I got sent a really bad starter button, and he said, I upgraded to the one with the screen and it works much better. So I am going to try that. I just haven't had any time because I've been too busy working with the school system and trying to get other things done in my life. So I'll get there eventually. Obviously, I'm more excited about riding my regular bike than I am about putting together this e-bike, so it's taken me a little while to get it together, but I'll get it together. And let's see, what else do I have here in my mechanical minute and bicycle tips? It's never a minute, first of all. I'm going to just go to, let's see here, let's do a couple things. Why shorter cranks are better according to science? Yeah, so you're hearing a lot about the shorter bike crank, the shorter length cranks on bicycles. You see a lot of the pros that are racing, and they're just really spinning their legs really fast, able to utilize their cardiovascular system a little bit more. Well, they're all running on shorter cranks. They're going 160s, 165s. That's what they're looking at right now. And of course, once I get through the e-bike project, I'm going to go to the shorter crank project, because I've always been a high cadence guy, although my cardiovascular system is not that of professional standards, it's still easier for me to turn the cranks over than it is to really punch down hard on the pedals as far as my, you know, my strength to weight ratio and all that goes. So anyway, as you will note, there's the races are getting faster and faster and faster on the pro level, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that they have changed a lot of technology on the bikes. Aerodynamic bicycles, which once in a breakaway will actually perform better at higher speeds. There's that going on, but there's also the short crank. Now, the short crank is beneficial because when you've got these really high-level athletes that have very high VO2 maxes, and if you don't know what a VO2 max is, that is your ability to process oxygen and in an efficient manner. And you will find, and I've done this with people too before, I've talked to people and I said, you know, what you really need to do is you need to learn how to spin better, because everyone knows how to ride a bike. No one knows how to ride a bike. Until you really start riding a bike and learning more about it and hanging around with other people who ride bikes all the time, you really don't know a lot about riding your bicycle if you're new at this. Now, I only say that if you're new at this because I know I have a lot of listeners that are out there that have ridden their bicycles for many, many years, and they're going, oh, Ron, do you have to beat this dead horse again? Yes, I do, always. Cadence is cadence, and cadence makes a big, big difference. So you get these folks that can turn over those high RPMs, and the first thing that newbies tell me is, you know, I tried that, but I'm breathing so hard. It really is much harder than I thought it was going to be. And then I have to say, you know, give it a couple of weeks. Get used to it. You're going to find that you may be breathing a little harder at first, but once you settle into it, you're going to find that going over the hills is a whole lot easier, that you're not basically torquing out your legs to the point where you have major catastrophic failures by being too far away from home and having your legs go dead on you. There's a lot of bonuses to this and a lot of benefit. So anyway, higher RPMs is a thing. Hey Chris, how you doing today? So anyway, let's go on to what's going on here as far as these short cranks go. And then a lot of us rode with 170 millimeter crank arms and 172 fives and 175 millimeter crank arms. And that was all pretty good, but that was kind of the way things were. And now things are changing. And some brands are speccing, you know, 170 millimeter cranks in their smaller sizes and 175 in their larges. But that's not really what people are gravitating to right now. So we'll see what happens with the OE bikes that are coming in and if they're going to start putting shorter cranks on them. The only bikes they ever put shorter cranks on when I was in the industry were the really, really small bikes and bikes that were made for really small people because they just didn't have really long legs. And so it made kind of sense. And I was always converting over for women, especially shorter crank arms for people because they were far more comfortable on the bikes when we went to shorter crank arms. So the theory is it's made the longer cranks often offer more leverage, meaning more torque can be generated for a given force of the pedal. And it's true, but leverage comes at a cost, okay? And that cost is that you start wiping out your legs, basically. You're pushing down hard on the pedals all the time, and eventually your legs will say, you know what? We've had enough of this, and they're not going to work for you anymore. So that's not such a good thing. And you can find yourself a long ways from home with some very, very sore and cramping legs, and you'll be in a lot of trouble. Now, if that is your style of riding, and that's what you do, and you have a certain set distance that you can do that in, good for you. But my knees are... they're not 20 years old any longer, although I did most of my damage to them when I was 20 years old, but that's another story. When you're looking for the torque that you generate, you generate it traditionally at a lower rotational speed because the circumference is bigger. Power is just force times speed, or torque times rotational speed. So either way, the power is the same, at least in theory. And it's well documented that riders eventually or naturally pedal at a higher RPM when they're using shorter cranks. So to some extent, the reduced torque is compensated by a higher cadence. So there, that's why you see these Grand Tour riders that are going up grades that are bigger than I like to look at, 14%, 15%, some of them 22-23%, and they're still spinning their legs around really fast because they're using shorter crank arms. That's what's going on here. So when you go to shorter crank arms, you may have to put a bigger gear on. There's different things that you may have to compensate for, but those shorter crank arms do make a big difference when you're climbing. So there was a 2001 study by J.C. Martin and W.W. Sperduso, one of the biggest and most comprehensive on crank length. They measured the maximum sprint power output on a static bike with 16 trained cyclists, each using a wide range of crank lengths, 120, 145, 170, 195, and 220 millimeters. Ouch. Who is the monster who can push that? Perhaps unsurprisingly, the lowest power outputs were recorded at the most extreme 120 millimeter and 220 millimeter crank lengths. The highest power output was recorded with the 145 millimeter crank, although the difference wasn't large or consistent enough to be considered significant compared to the 170 or 195 millimeter cranks. The difference in power between the best 145 millimeter and the worst 220 millimeter was just 3.9%. And as you expect, crank lengths increased, the cadence decreased from 136 RPM for the 120s to 110 for the 220s. In other words, the body adapts by changing cadence to suit the crank length. Looking for at all the data of the 16 cyclists and all the five crank lengths, the authors estimated the optimal crank length for sprinting was 20.5% of leg length or 41% of tibia length. But in either case, the correlation was too weak to draw any firm or precise conclusions. The main takeaway here is that sprint power output varied very little, especially across the middle three sizes, 145, 170, 195, which is a much wider range of crank lengths than was typically used. So is there a disadvantage for kids riding adult size cranks? Yes, absolutely. Try not to do that. If you can do something different, it's definitely helpful. The maximum sprint power tested with the standard 170 millimeter crank and optimal crank arm length, which was on the previous study calculated to be 20% of their leg length. Therefore, the optimal cranks were therefore much shorter than 170 millimeters. So yes, I would say that you should, if you are putting your child on a bike and you're looking for them to get intrigued by the sport or enthused by the sport, definitely put some short crank arms on there, and they'll be a lot happier and they'll develop a lot better too. I even spent the very first year of my racing career on a smaller chain ring on the front of my bike, because fortunately I had friends who recognized my cadence and my natural high cadence technique that I was using, and they said, you should perfect that, because you know that's like outstanding that you can turn those cranks around that fast. And so we put a smaller crank arm on. I was riding 170s, but put a short smaller chain wheel on the front, and it made me spin a little faster. And I thank them to this day for helping me discover that and how that worked for me. So what about your aerobic efficiency as opposed to maximum sprint power? Yeah, here's where things get a little bit different. They had 9 trained male cyclists pedal at a sub-maximal aerobic power output with 145, 170, and 195 crank arms, each at 4 different cadences, 40, 60, 80, and 100 RPMs. This gave 12 different pedal speeds, crank length versus cadence. They did this at 30, 60, and 90% of their lactate threshold, while the volumes of oxygen they consumed and the CO2 they produced was measured to determine the metabolic cost of cycling at each power output and each crank length. They found that the metabolic cost of cycling was strongly correlated to the speed crank length times cadence, but it wasn't related strongly to the cadence or crank length per se. In other words, riding with shorter cranks required faster cadence and longer cranks required a slower cadence. But with the right cadence, the crank length doesn't significantly affect the metabolic cost of pedaling at a given output. So it gets more confusing. And but this study goes on, and they had a lot. Where am I getting this from, by the way? This is from a site called Pink Bike, and Trail Forks is the article. It's in their news section, so it's very, very interesting. So what it all comes down to is you do find that mountain bikers tend to use a little bit shorter crank arm because they can spin their legs around faster on really, really extreme climbs. And that's where it really shows up. It really shows up when you're going up to really, really steep stuff. And then there are people that like to get out of the saddle and stand, and they tend to be using a little bit longer crank arm. I have always been an out-of-the-saddle climber, even though I do spin fairly well, but I am adjusting now due to some physical issues that I'm dealing with, and I'm not going to mention the age has anything to do with that, because we're staying out of the age game here. It has a lot to do with it. Anyway, I'm running 172.5s right now, which I've been using for years, and I'm ready for a change, and I'm thinking of dropping down to 165s. That's the direction I'm thinking of going, because it all is starting to make more and more sense. Mountain bikers, the running 10 millimeter shorter cranks won't slow you down. But it'll also give you a little bit more clearance. And that's another thing to look at, that you get a little bit more pedal clearance when you go that direction. So the results are, yeah, you're going to use a little bit more of your cardiovascular system in order to climb up a hill. You're going to use a lot less of your musculature when you're climbing up the hills if you're using the shorter cranks. And as far as spinning down the road, you change the entire angle of everything. You're going to have to raise your saddle by a certain amount, and that is going to be a noticeable difference there. And you do have to be careful about that, because your bike may turn into because of the raising of the saddle so much, you may end up being on the wrong size bike to be able to pull this off. So you got to be really careful about a lot of things here. If you're going to shorten your crank arms by 10 millimeters, you're going to raise your saddle by probably equally as much. So you got to be really, like I said, careful about that. It's in theory, but then again, there's also science behind it, and there's really good reasons why you should or should not go in this direction. If you're perfectly happy on your bike the way it is right now, and you're doing just fine, and the hills aren't, you're not having an objection to the hills, and you're not out to win any major racing events or anything like that, you just want to have fun on your bike, you can disregard everything I just said. But if you are looking for a little bit better performance, maybe it's because you are competing, maybe you're doing some gravel rides, maybe you're doing some racing, who knows what it is. Maybe you're just getting a little older and you're always looking for that secret weapon. Because I'm going to tell you, folks, I will be very, very honest with you. It does not get easier. Yeah. It doesn't get easier. You become more and more challenged with age. You become a lot more aware of the amount of rest you're getting. And that is a key factor right there, real key factor. Rest is just essential as you get older. I find I have less hard days and more easy days, and that seems to help me a lot more. And I wish I'd known then what I know now, right? Isn't that the way that works? Anyway, yeah, the age factor is definitely a factor. It's all in there. And yet I still have friends that are in their 80s and they're still racing bicycles and they're doing quite well. So, you know, there's two pieces to that. One piece is the fact that they stuck with it for so many years and they continue to race bikes for so many years. The second part of that piece is that there's less competition when you get older because people start drifting either out of the sport or out of their lives. And so therefore you've got a little bit better advantage there. Not to bring up anything gruesome or grim or anything like that, but that's just reality. That's what it is. So this is certainly something you may want to try. And, you know, it may or may not work out for you. Once again, it's on my list of things to do after the e-bike craziness that I'm going through right now and trying to figure out how to put that all together. And then I will move on to the next adventure, which is going to be shorter crank arms. And I do talk about this a fair amount on this show, but I'm fascinated by it. So that is why I do that. So anyway, let's see, what else do we have here today to look at? So I thought this would be kind of an interesting way to start the show. I mean, we've all heard it before, you know, where are bikes made? The truth about bicycle manufacturing. Well, we still make some bikes here in the United States. They're, generally speaking, they're the top of the top as far as price goes. They are certainly it's not an item that's what I would call affordable by most, but we do make some very high quality hand-built frames here. And once again, we stop right there. Frames. Did you hear me? Frames. That's it. Component-wise, not so much. So if you've ever wondered where your two-wheeled wonder comes from, we can look down here and see what you can find. And that is most of, in terms of bicycle production, there are certain countries that dominate the global market. China, by far, is the largest producer of bicycles in the world. It's estimated that 100 million bicycles are produced there each year. China produces about 75% of them. Of the 76.4 million bicycles produced by China in 2021, 1.5% more than 2020, the 69.23 million of those were exported. Incidentally, they also produced 45.51 million e-bikes in that same year, representing a 10.3% increase from the year before. Other significant manufacturing hubs include India, Taiwan, and Europe. One European country is ready to give China some stiff competition, though. Of the 13.5 million non-motorized vehicles produced in Europe in 2021, nearly 3 million of those were produced in Portugal, according to accounting for around 20% of the EU's total production. Portugal. That's interesting, isn't it? So, anyway, to understand the origin of bikes, it's essential to differentiate between the different aspects of making a bike, such as design, manufacturing, assembly, and we can simplify the process, such as design involves the conceptualizing and engineering of the bike's major components, as well as overall functionality. Manufacturers turn these designs into physical parts, constructing, and to a certain extent, assembling them, and the assembly stage involves putting these different components together, or at least up until the point of sale. So when we talk about where bicycles are made, we're really talking more about where they're manufactured, and that's really what the story is here. The manufacturing stage is usually outsourced to China or Taiwan, and not very many other places. So are there any bicycles made in the U.S.? Yeah, sure there is. Contrary to popular belief, it's still manufactured in the U.S., whilst the majority of bike production takes place in Asia. Several notable American companies continue to manufacture bikes domestically. However, manufacturing bikes in the U.S. is not common. In fact, 99% of the bicycles sold in the United States are imported from China and Taiwan. Whilst popular U.S.-based manufacturers like Trek or Specialized may design and or assemble domestically, manufacturing is almost always done elsewhere, right? They don't even make them here. I mean, they used to do that for a little while. When I was first in the bicycle industry, I was approached by Trek in their very early days. They were out of Waterloo, Wisconsin. They were building hand-built Reynolds 531 frames, lugged frames. They're nicely made. They had sort of a like production system going, so they could keep the prices down a little bit lower, and you know, they were trying to make a splash into the bicycle industry, and obviously they made a huge splash in the bike industry, but that's, you could still buy, you know, a production steel frame in the United States. If you wanted to build buy a hand-built frame, those were also very, very available from U.S. manufacturers, or we shall call them frame builders. But everyone has tried, and I would say everyone has failed as far as that goes. So some of the bikes manufactured in the USA include a company called Allied, which does carbon fiber road and gravel bikes made in Little Rock, Arkansas. Gorilla, a revved carbon mountain carbon mountain bikes made in Denver, Colorado. Moot Cycles, which makes road, gravel, and mountain bicycles in Steam Springs, Colorado. Squid Bikes, track and BMX bikes made in California. Detroit Bikes, which are commuter bikes, the majority of which are made in Detroit, Michigan. And there's more than just that. We have locally here, Richard Sachs and Peter Weigel are still building hand-built steel frames that you can wait for 3 years to get. They got a bit of a waiting list. So they're still very popular, and they're still quite nice, but that's what it is. And then there's Seven Cycles out of Boston, which is still at it, and they're making really high-level titanium bicycles. Some with a little bit of a carbon mix, but mostly it's titanium bikes up there, and just gorgeous, gorgeous bikes. But you got to bring your checkbook. So that's just kind of the way it is. And in Europe, They play a significant part in the bike industry behind Asia, and it's the continent that produces the most bicycles. Cycling is extremely popular in some parts of Europe, such as in the Netherlands and Germany, so it's good to see some brands also choose to manufacture there. In 2021, just under 13.5 million bikes were produced in Europe from Bosnia and Herzegovina all the way to Portugal. There's also a number of bikes, e-bikes produced in Asia and Germany and in... doesn't really say any more than that. So, mostly bikes that are made in Europe are coming out of Portugal, and there are some that are manufactured in Italy and Germany, and you can get them from a few of those countries. But again, it's a numbers game, and it's really inexpensive and hard to beat the Chinese market, because they've got manufacturing down to a science. They've done a really incredible job. So you're not going to find a lot of bikes that are made even in Europe anymore. Let's see what else we have here. There's also the possibility of bikes made in the UK. A great number of bikes made in the UK, given the UK's rich history and design and manufacturing heritage. It's very little surprise that there's a number of brands that choose to produce there. So we've got Volt and Brompton, and Hummingbird and Enigma and Zwarf Cycles, all coming out of the UK. Unsurprisingly, bikes manufactured in the UK tend to carry a premium price tag, just like the ones in the United States. So you're going to be getting a premium product, but you're also going to be getting a hefty price tag goes along with it. And if you're looking for something specialty oriented, like a Brompton, which is a folding bike, they've got a really unique product.
Here's
and so some people will want to have a they'll just want to have this unique product that comes out of there. And the biggest bike brands, they pretty much are using China and Taiwan as far as that goes. And the giant bicycle company, which originated in Taiwan, is the leading global bike brand. Giant continues to produce its bikes domestically. The company has a domestic state-of-the-art set of production facilities, allowing them to produce a wide range of models there. There's also a few bicycles that are being made in the Netherlands. Of course, China and Hungary are listed here too. So it depends on what you're looking for as far as what you're going to find in Europe and or the United States. So hopefully that clears up any of those questions about where are bikes made, where is my bike made, whatever you want to know. And I'm going to tell you, it's primarily going to be in China. All right, what else we got here? Let's see what I have time for here. I got to go to the Giro. I just got to go to the Giro. The Giro was great. If you like the Giro, if you're a big bike racing fan, the Giro is certainly one of the more fascinating races to watch. It tends to be early season. So being early season, we have fitness issues with some riders. And then we also have weather issues. Boy, they did have some weather. They had rain, they had wind, they rode through snowy areas because they're riding up into the Alps and the Dolomites, so they're going to have some mountain stages that they're going to be dealing with weather issues. I've seen the Giro in blizzards and snow squalls, and I've seen the Giro in this year extremely hot conditions, very unusual for the Giro this year. But so weather is always a factor. But the other thing that's a factor is the Italian countryside. They've got just some of, if you're ever thinking of maybe going on a trip to Italy, watch a few episodes, a few days of the Giro, just to give yourself a little taste of how beautiful it is there. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, you think about it, it's a giant peninsula, very similar to Florida, except Florida has no mountains and the Giro has ridiculous mountains. So Italy has lots and lots and lots of mountains. So that is, like I said, it's beautiful. The videography was tremendous because now we're not just using helicopters, we're also using drones to do a lot of the video recording. And it's just really, really impressive. I love it when the drones are like sitting right on top of the Peloton and they're just, it's like they're, you're in the Peloton. Speaking of in the Peloton, if you go to the Facebook page, Bicycle Talk Facebook page, I have footage from this year's final stage of the Giro d'Italia. And it is, there's a camera sitting on one of the bikes, and you get to see how crazy it is riding in that Peloton during those high-speed sprints that they do in the last day. It was really impressive. Very, very cool. So it's if you never, ever want to try to do a bike race or but want to understand what it's all about, this will scare you because it's like, it's frightening. It is just frightening. There's a camera that's sitting on the back of one of the riders and you can see all sorts of chaos behind him. It's just wild. It's just a wild, wild thing. So that's on the Facebook page if you're looking to experience that. But let's move on to the Giro. Jonas Vingegaard made the Giro look easy. Now comes the hard part, beating Pogacar in the Tour de France again. So that is going to be the race. That's going to be it. The Tour de France is going to really develop here. You know, Vingegaard is back. He's definitely in very good health. He had that horrible crash a couple of years ago that made him really think twice about continuing to race his bike. It's a very, very strong family man. By the way, why does Jonas Vingegaard kiss the handlebars of his bicycle when he wins a bike race? Does anybody out there know that? I'm going to give you the answer here shortly. He does two things. He kisses the handlebars on his bike, and he kisses the back of his hand. And anyway, we had this discussion going. I was on the phone with Billy and we were watching the race and there he goes. He just kissed his handlebars again. He won 5 stages of the Giro this year. So he got that chance to do that 5 times. On the handlebar of his bike is a picture of his wife and his family. And when he crosses the line and wins a stage, he kisses the bike in honor of them and all the sacrifices they put out for him to be able to race his bike. And the kissing of the back of the hand, even though it's a different hand than what we use here in the United States, it is he's actually kissing his wedding ring in honor of his wife. So, you know, Jonas is a very emotional guy. Hard to see it because he's as stoic as he can be when he's on the bike. He is straight-faced and, you know, you don't want to play poker with that guy because he's not going to give away anything at all. Speaking of poker, though, we'll get to that in a minute. So anyway, Jonas, I thought Visma was like, they were like laser smooth with what they did this year. They had a what we'll call a very surgical race, and they planned it really well, and they kept Jonas protected, and Jonas was kind of using it as a training ride for the Tour de France. I don't know how that's going to work out. We got like 30 days, and the tour starts on July 4th. And as of the moment of this broadcast, it's June 1st. So it's not a lot of time. It's not a lot of time. But they have a plan, and he's going to chill for a couple of weeks, and they've got a plan. So we'll see what happens. They're going into the tour with one of the strongest teams ever. So once again, we'll see what the plan is and how it works out. But I think it is definitely going to be the Jonas versus Pogačar Tour de France this year. Although there are some other players in there, and there's definitely some other things that could happen. We've got Remco Evenepoel, who's going to be there again this year. I had a whole bunch of others. I'm just not showing them right here. We've got other riders that are out there. I know that Sepp Kuss, by the way, who won a Giro. He won a stage 19. If you didn't see it, you need to look it up, because it's definitely something that was, it was a great stage to watch. It was in the Dolomites. It was crazy, crazy hilly, just nasty, nasty climbs. And it was very, very interesting. So anyway, and it's the first time Sepp has ever won a stage in the Giro. He has now won a stage in the Giro, the Tour de France, and also the Vuelta a España, of which he won overall 1 year. So anyway, that's our boy that's our friend from Durango, Colorado, who really resides mostly now in Spain. He lives in a small village in Spain, and he married a Spanish woman, and he is possibly the most well-liked man in the Peloton. I've never heard anyone say anything negative about him. He's very respected. He's strong. He's just like, he's the real deal. And he has dedicated his life to being a domestique, which is not an easy job, let me tell you. If someone comes to you and says, you know what, we think you're really talented on your bicycle, we'd like to make you into a domestique for our team, think twice about that one. It's really difficult. So anyway, it was fun to watch. And Jonas, I got to make mention of, there's another guy I got to make mention of before I talk about any more here. Tim Rex, okay? They call him T-Rex. If you have not seen the footage of him, did I put that on my Facebook page? I might have put that up there too. If you've not seen the footage of him as he is taking a horribly strong pull, trying to keep Jonas up in the front so they could finally launch Jonas to win one of his stages. If you have not seen that, you don't know what pain is. You really don't. This guy just put it out. He put it all out. He was rolling in around 360-400 watts of power. He's not a big guy. He's a big guy, but not a big guy. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the George Hincappy sized guy, if you remember him. He's 6'3". That's pretty tall for a bike racer. He's 154 pounds. That's pretty skinny. That's definitely a lightweight frame to be putting out 400 watts of power on a climb. That's a lot of power. So anyway, he's 22 years old, and he is he's a road rider. Of course, he's been with Visma since 2025, and he is outrageously. Let's say he puts a lot of passion and emotion into his ride. Now, him, I could play poker with, because I can tell exactly what's going on with him by looking at his face. He was, it was pretty outstanding. So, yeah, T-Rex, Tim Rex, check him out. He is a young rider for the Visma team. I don't know that he will be going on to France. I think he will have had his day at this point when you see just how hard he was working. Although, I do know that Sepp Kuss is planning on going to the Tour de France to be working with Jonas Vingegaard again. They're going in with a ridiculously strong team, and they're going to need it because Tadej Pogačar is phenomenally good, and he is having yet another year at this point. He did really well in the classics. He's a little powerful monster is what he is. He's great. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. Anyway, the final from the Giro is Jonas Vingegaard. Obviously was first place. We've been talking about him for a while. He sat still for a long time and they waited. Like I said, it was with precision that Visma won that race. Everything was well planned out. Everything they said they were going to do, they did. They did it on specific days. Jonas walked away with 5 victories. That's pretty impressive in itself for a guy who's headed on to the Tour de France. I wouldn't have thought they would have him expend that much energy, but he just looks comfortable. He just looks like he belongs on a bike. He's one of those guys, you look at him and go, wow, this guy just, you know, he and his bike are like one. They really, really look good. Doesn't fight with his bike. He's really, really strong and he's really smooth. And he is a spinner. He's got those legs moving. I don't have any VO2 max numbers from him. I would like to know what they are because obviously he can process some oxygen. There's no question about that. Second place was Felix Gall. And Felix was down 5 minutes and 22 seconds. So not even close to Jonas, which gave Jonas a very relaxed win, we'll call it. Relaxed win? You win 5 stages, that's a relaxed win? What am I talking about? Jai Hindley was down 6 minutes and 25 seconds. So another minute behind Felix Gall and then Thymen Arensman, was 7 minutes and 2 seconds from the leader. So he was another minute behind. And Derek G from Lidl Trek was right behind him at 7:56. So those were your top 5. And it was definitely a fun race to watch as bike races go. There was some controversy. There was the day that Vingegaard made a statement by rounding up a whole bunch of the riders and they all complained about the finish line on one of their flat stages because there have been so many horrible accidents in the very beginning of the race that they protested and they won a ruling which basically neutralized the finish of that day's stage because, yeah, promoters, get it together. It may be nice to send it by your brother-in-law's pastry shop, but, you know, if you're putting in ridiculous turns and nasty, narrow streets and cobblestones and all sorts of, you know, bad pavement just to make the race go a certain direction through town and make it very exciting, you got to think about the well-being of the riders, man. These guys are not paid enough to be thrown into those kind of situations. And it's, you know, it's been a complaint that I've had with the UCI for years that they're not really enforcing this enough. And so I will shout that out as a Ron rant because I am very concerned about the level that these guys are riding at and their safety. And they're all just people in the long run. And they got families, they've got friends, they've got lives. And when they risk their life because of a bad decision by a race promoter, that one kind of gets to me. I don't think I like that. So, Jonas, yeah, He's healthier and stronger and more confident than any point since his devastating 2024 crash. He's earned a place among cycling's immortals, something that not even Pogacar has yet achieved, and proved that the controversial decision to race in the Giro double may have been his smartest decision and the smartest decision that Visa has made all winter. He's going to head home before joining Visma's altitude camp later this month. He'll stay in Rome for a few days with his family to relax and enjoy some nice food, and then I'll start working for the Tour de France, Vingegaard said Sunday. I believed in this project to do the Giro Tour since November, and now I feel my body can go for the next grand tours. I'm not on my knees. Whoa, that's a statement. That's it. All the signs say that Jonas will head to the Tour strong and confident, but perhaps more so than ever before. But does that mean an all-out battle with Pogacar is coming? I'd say yeah. And there's some other factors in there. We're not done yet. There's other riders in there that are going to mix it up, and other teams in there that are going to mix it up. I look at the Bahrain team. I think they're really strong. They've got some great stuff going on. There's, you know, the UAE team is like, it's pretty good, but, you know, Pogacar's kind of their guy. And, you know, they kind of really focus on him. And I think that, you know, he's got such an ego about him that he thinks he can do it without them anyway. I think that's a bad idea. But, you know, this is bike racing. You know, we'll never know. We'll just kind of have to see. So let's go on to events. Giro's over. The Tour is coming July 4th to July 26th. Yeah, right around the corner. Here we go. We're back at it again. I can hardly wait. Yay! But let me mention something about what's coming up Sunday, June 7th at the Wethersfield Bicycle Festival and Show and Swap Meet. And that is at the Hammer Elementary School in Wethersfield, and there's going to be thousands of bike parts, accessories, cycle clothing, advertising, anywhere from a dozen to a triple vendors and sellers from all over New England and surrounding states, and presenters from various bicycle and cycling organizations. They've got BMX, mountain bike, road, gravel, e-bike, velomobiles, unicycles, tricycles, trials bikes, antique, vintage, modern, cutting edge, new, steel, carbon, aluminum, and more. You never know what you're going to be seeing when you go to the Wethersfield Bicycle Festival on Sunday, June 7th. That's coming up next week, or this weekend, I would say, coming up. So anyway, it's also a bicycle show with people showing off the bikes they love, and, you know, kind of like going to a car show sort of thing. And a scavenger hunt for kids and families. Find a bike from Italy. Find a bike from your favorite color. Blah, 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 blah. Demos such as the Cargo Bike Experience 24. Ride a penny farthing. Helmet fitting and safety checks. This has turned into, Tom's done a really good job with this. This has become a really, really nice event. So you can also share an interesting bike story with Bike Karma Bicycle and Cycling Stories podcast and get free stickers. General admission is free. You can bring a bike to walk around with or try to trade. Folks with more than one bike, either for sale or showing parts, accessories, they get a seller spot, which has a fee that goes along with it. And the event is rain or shine at Hamner School. So that brings us to the final finishing point. Give me your opinion. You got that bike out yet? You getting upset about gas prices? Please do. Please get upset. Get upset. Ride your bike. Give it back to them, right? Give it back to them. Stop buying their product. It's a great thing. And remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is a safer and easier option for more people, because when more people bike, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Get out and ride your bike and take that pedal and run challenge. Park your car one day and use your bicycle instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, if you're riding your bike or you're driving a car, please be safe and be kind. And remember, every person you pass has someone waiting for them at home. The views expressed in this program do not reflect views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk, and I am Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. See you next week. Get on your bikes, ride!